Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, and Virginia. From boosted same-game parlays to live in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today and bet $100 to get a $100 free bet at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WynnBET. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WYNNBET. We're also brought to you by the SGPN Bowl Challenge. $250 cash and $250 gift card are up for grabs exclusively in the SGPN app.
Hi-yo, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Episode 257. It's going to go out to my co-host, Gumby Vreeland, who finally hit his Hungry Man Jong superfan parlay last night, plus 1530-something. He'll tell you, I'm sure. I'm sure he's dying to jump right in now and tell you what it was. 1534. Two-fight parlay. It hit over 15 times your money. Luckily, it seemed like quite a few of his acolytes online actually followed his advice and took that bet. So congrats to you as well. It was a wild night in the UFC. Their last pay-per-view of 2022 definitely went out with a bang. A wild night for several reasons, which we will get into. I'm one of your hosts, Jeff Chalks Fox, who actually hit one dog last night. I think, yeah, I almost hit two. I should have hit two. One was stolen out of my hands at the last minute or so, but I wasn't totally chalky. But my co-host, of course, got his butt kicked by me. But in real life, IRL, as the kids say, he seemed like he did pretty good because he was giving out some very specific prop bets in the sportsgamblingpodcast.com/discord last night, and they were hitting. It was almost like he knew in advance. Let's see if he really does see into the future or not. We'll have to ask him that right now. It's the Gumby God, Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hello.
So first of all, yeah, you did. I want to comment on the part where you said you did beat my butt. I agree. You as far as our $100 pick ones did in fact win, and actually on the recommended plays ones, technically you won this week.
Not technically,
but. Had these judges not had their heads so far up their own ass and actually watched the same fight we were watching, I'm pretty sure that one bad decision is enough to have cost me against you across the board. Am I wrong about that?
Across the board? No, I don't.
Like even on the recommended plays. Because that was a $110 swing for me,
yeah,
on recommended
true.
Plays.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is probably a difference maker. I would also say this real quick too, because you mentioned the Superfan John Parlay plus 1534, yep. For those counting at home. But I also, you dedicated the episode to me. I want to give a shout out to Dave L, who hit the Superfan John Parlay in
sure
the
did.
Discord. And not only that, he said he was throwing an extra $20 on it before the fights even started. And if that extra $20 hit it, he was giving it all to charity. So like,
right, that's right. Yes.
That's just like the goodness that exists around the holiday seasons in our Discord. Yeah. Once again, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/discord. But yeah, like that deserves its own special kind of shout out. That's the niceness that you often don't see in the world of betting money on people punching each other in the face.
No, and especially online online chat type boards too, or any kind of online social media. You usually don't see that kind of generosity of spirit, but you definitely do in the SGPN Discord. And then I saw someone tweet you. Was that a fake tweet that you got? Because I see it's deleted now. Someone tweeted you with some massive parlay they hit.
I don't know if that was real or not.
Because it's gone now. I tried to find who it was. So, yeah.
Oh, it's gone now. That's tragic. Maybe it was fake. Sometimes people send fake slips to you, but send the real ones. We like seeing the real
exactly.
ones.
Well, I got so many. That mutual acquaintance of ours on Twitter DM me. He was just winning money. Hand over fist last night. Who was it in the Discord who... our super fan probably wasn't enough for him. So
they threw Yair Zinho Rosenstreich in there and turned it into 34-1 or something.
Yeah. Like, do you remember who that was, or will I have to look it up?
I'm gonna get on it. I'll get on it. You just keep doing your usual stuff.
Oh, that means I have to talk then. All right. Yeah. So it was complaining about the judges. We didn't need the judges until the very end of the fight. So this could have been a disastrous night all around if we didn't have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 straight finishes. We actually needed the judges for a fight. But when we did need the judges for the top two fights of the night, they dropped the ball and we kind of left, the night with a, I want to say a sour taste in their mouths, but not really. Cause it seemed like everyone, made some pretty darn good money on the event from various ways. Like I said, Gumby was giving up very specific, prop bets that were hitting, but one of them, of course, he's lamenting the one that did not hit, the one that would have turned the tide for him at the event. But anyhow, it was a fun and memorable event, to say the least, which we'll recap with you in one moment after I tell you about WinBet, and we'll let the intern do his research work.
It was Eric Degenerate, by the way.
Eric Degenerate. Yes, of course, because I said, of course, he had to make an extra bet because his last name's Degenerate. Yes. Hopefully, he did all that at WinBet. Ready to win money and booster odds. WinBet is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, and Virginia. We're bringing the excitement of Win Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play. Exclusive rewards are right at your fingertips with Win Rewards on WinBet. Looking to get involved in a same game parlay? WinBet is your home with their WinBet Build Your Own Bet, letting you customize the bet you want to make. Great promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now at WinBet. WinBet has what you need to win. Ready to play? Sign up today. Receive a special offer, bet $100 and win $100. There's so much to choose from. All you have to do is head over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/winbet so they know we sent you. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WYNNBET. You claim your free bet today. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at winbet.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WinBet is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Okay. As expected and predicted, the main event ended up in a draw. Dana White's claiming it was a bad fight. I don't think it really was a bad fight. Maybe once Ankalaev started fighting smart, it was a dumb fight, but regardless, it was a split draw. 48-47 for Blachowicz, 46-48 for Ankalaev, 47-47 draw. What a mess. I was on Ankalaev's side. Dan was on Blachowicz's side heading into the fight. Seems like everyone and their mothers were on Ankalaev's side that he won that fight. So the fight between number 3 and number 4 for the title, because that makes sense, ends up in a draw. So now we're going to get number 2 versus number 7 for the title. So that makes perfect sense as well. Go ahead, Gumby. Break it
down. Yeah, I mean, like, break what? There's so much to break down. So much. Obviously, for those of you who didn't hear, Dana White hated this fight so much that he decided to immediately make another light heavyweight title fight involving neither of these two guys.
Sounds like a convenient excuse for making a preposterous title fight. Just so you hate the one that you saw.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't hate the Glover versus Jamal Hill fight. Obviously, like, I hate that it, like, materialized from nowhere, and seemingly to my knowledge, Jamal Hill did not know about this until it was on the broadcast. Because
great.
if you look at at his tweet as soon as that fight ended as a draw, like he tweeted immediately after that fight ended as a draw, hey, let's put the belt on the line for me versus Anthony Smith. Like jokingly, yeah. Right? Like me versus Smith for the title ? And so like maybe they called him at that moment or something, but like seemingly he wouldn't have tweeted that out if Dana had given any inkling that he would be ripped from that card and put on one next month against Glover Teixeira. So like, yeah, craziness altogether. But that being said, let's get to talking about the fight.
Let's do that.
The weirdest thing for me is that, you know, I scored it for Ankalaev in real time too, right? I gave him the first, fourth, and fifth. And I thought pretty clearly the fourth and fifth were obviously his.
Yes.
You could make an argument for a 10-8 fifth. I didn't give him a 10-8 fifth, but you could certainly make an argument for a 10-8 fifth. But like two and three were clearly Blankovic, right?
Yeah.
Did you see the judges' scorecards?
Yeah, I can't remember it now because it's maddening. So
every single judge gave the first round to Jan Blankovic.
I missed the first round, so I can't. Oh, I only saw highlights, so I can't. Unfortunately, I can't comment, so I'm relying on you.
It was so. Here's the thing: it was back and forth. That first round
was close.
It's a coin flip for me. You know, like if you look at a whole bunch of different places where you know people put down scorecards, like the first was arguably close. And if you had given it to Blankovic, which I agree you could have, I could see this ending in a draw, right? 1-2-3 for Blankovic.
Yeah.
4 for Ankalaev, 10-8 fifth, not right. How I scored it. And actually, scoring this for Blankovic, I don't think is wrong, because 1-2-3 could go for Blankovic, and that's what Sal D'Amato had, and then the 10-8 last round. Or Michael Bell had it, you know, 1-2-3 Blankovic, 10-9 in the last round, so score it for him. But, like, I don't know how you give the third to Ankalaev and give him the win. Like, Derek Cleary's scorecard, even though it went to the person who was, you know, in my opinion, supposed to win, was weird and wrong. You know, like the third round, I can't see how you score it for Ankalaev. And that's what ultimately gave Ankalaev the win in that one. So yeah, like real weird scorecards here out of these guys. And ones I don't necessarily agree with. Because if you give Blankovic the first here, I think at the bare minimum, this is a draw.
Yeah, I thought it was in the bag. You guys were, I must have been behind watching and unknowingly, because you guys were all like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I'm like, what? I thought this was like cut and dry when the decision was being announced. So, and then I thought, oh, Blankovic won. And then they set a draw. So, which may have been even less believable than Blankovic just winning it outright. So it was a push in the main event, which we don't want to see. Which means no bets happened. No money was made. No money was lost. I was going to beat Gumby there again. But anyhow, I don't think it was a bad fight. I think Dana White's just being salty or finding an excuse to move on to the next two people.
Yeah. I mean, like, so it was already kind of hinted that Brazil card was going to have one more title fight on it.
Yeah.
Like they showed a graphic. I want to say it was at UFC 281, but now I don't remember. They showed a graphic of the main card of that, and TBA was the main event, not the Moreno versus Figueiredo 4. So I think a lot of people mentally were like, oh, that must be Amanda Nunes. That must be Valentina Shevchenko, or that must be, like, everybody started drawing their own conclusions. I don't think this was choice number one. Yeah. I don't think this was on deck to be like, this is definitely what they're doing. But with that being said, I think it wound up being really convenient for them to do it that way.
Yeah. They probably were hoping that someone, last night's main event ended quickly and someone didn't get hurt. And then they could have just shuffled them into the Glover fight, which when that didn't happen, then Dana had to pretend it was a bad fight and move and pivot to the next fighter. As we like to say in the business world, pivot. Yeah, if you like leg kicks, it wasn't a bad fight.
I mean,
it's fine.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think it was ultimately like a bad fight, but like when you need a vacant title to come out of here and like be the headliner on a, you know, a pretty decent pay-per-view, but like not a great one. Like how in the world, like that's not the performance you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's definitely not the performance you want.
Well, not the fighter's fault. They put it all on the line. So I was going to mock you for, I guess I can still mock you for believing in the legendary Polish power, but his leg kicks were powerful, I guess. But
well, and he didn't land any hands. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's a guy like Ankalaev was much better defensively than I thought he would be.
Yeah.
So like, you got to give him that. Like he was really good on defense.
Apparently it's back of the line for these two guys. So, Yeah.
What do you do with them? Do you just run them against each other again for the number one contender now?
Which is what was supposed to happen the first time. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? If Dana hated it so much, then you'd think he wouldn't do that. So, these guys were a couple of the rare fighters who did not earn a performance bonus last night. Same with the next two people who did not earn a performance bonus. Paddy Pimblett beat Jared Gordon as it predicted. 29-28 across the board. Another one. I watched the fight and then I heard who won. I'm like, what? No, because I wasn't watching it live. So that part, at least, I wasn't watching live. I had Pimblett -260. He won and still does not look anywhere near what his hype makes everyone believe he is. Jared Gordon, pretty clearly, everyone says it's like the greatest robbery ever. Round one and round two were not like blowouts at all for Gordon. I think Gordon was landing more, but I think Pimblett was at least more visible damage. He was scoring on Gordon. Round three was basically nothing. Gordon kind of lost the fight for himself there just by like playing it safe and grappling, not really doing much with his grappling. If he had just kept fighting the way he was fighting all along, he probably could have won that fight. But I still think he did enough to win the fight. He definitely won round three, despite how boring it was. Even though someone gave one of the judges gave it to Pimblett, I think Gordon won two rounds to one, as does every other person with a brain in their head online or elsewhere. But anyhow, Pimblett won the fight, and so I won my bet. And Gumby missed out on a +210 picked straight money line and a +450 Jared Gordon via decision. So that he's going to be a little salty. So go ahead.
I am a little salty. And I'll also say this about the scoring of that fight. Terrible scoring of that fight. Paddy Pimblett, I can see giving Paddy Pimblett the second. I cannot see giving him the first. I do not think the first round was close. I think the first round was very clearly a Jared or Gordon round here.
Way more volume, yeah.
Way more volume, way more damage. Like there's just like there wasn't a justification to giving him that round. If they had given Paddy the third round, as Chris Lee did, the judge Chris Lee,
yeah,
I actually respect his scorecard a little bit because he gave Gordon the first round as he should. He gave Pimblett the second round as he should. And I don't agree that Pimblett won the third. I gave the third to Jared Gordon. It was close. You could make an argument that like what Paddy did on the feet after he got up from being like kind of dominated for like three straight minutes.
Yeah.
You could make an argument that round three was his. I don't think it's a very good argument, but you could definitely make that argument. But here's the thing is that two other judges gave Jared Gordon that last round.
Yeah.
And somehow he still didn't win the fight because they had already given Paddy one and two, which is beyond me how he wins rounds one and two in that fight. Like that is round two is his. Round one was clearly not his. I don't know what the judges were thinking here. And it's like it's a bummer because like, I think ultimately, everybody's going to, beat the corruption drum again. And hey, like maybe they should be, but like at the end of the day, the biggest problem is that we've got judges who don't know what they're watching.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, one of those judges who gave that 10-8 or that 10-9 first round to Paddy Pimblett also, and I know we're not talking about Bellator right now, and I hate talking about Bellator.
Don't you worry.
Yeah, right. He gave a 50-45 card to the losing fighter in the main event of Bellator the night before. He back-to-back terrible scorecard days for Doug Crosby. And again, he's just getting assignments. So, like, what do you do about that?
Yeah, the corruption thing is always obviously that's what people want to jump to, but that's always like the last thing you really should point your finger at, because it takes a lot to Usually, what is it, Occam's razor? The most logical explanation is usually the right one. It's just
it's judges. Stupidity.
Who, yep, stupidity. Exactly. Stupidity.
It's the most likely answer is stupidity. Because
we've seen plenty of decisions go to fighters that you would expect the UFC to win. We've seen plenty of decisions go against them, and UFC just kind of ignores it and treats the fighter like they won anyhow. So they don't really need the judges to be in bed with them, so to speak. So I just think it's bad judging.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's real bad judging.
Yep. Luckily, but they giveth, they taketh away. This time they tooketh from Gumby and they gaveth to me. Next fight was stolen out of my hands, but it wasn't due to judges. Santiago Ponzinibbio, after pretty much being battered for how long we had? 13 minutes, 12 or 13 minutes of the fight, ended up TKOing a quickly tiring Alex Morono, who took the fight on very short notice. He TKO'd on punches round three, 229 after Morono. I thought this one was in the bag. I was going to hit a huge plus one. Well, huge for me, a plus 155 underdog, but no, it was sadly taken away. But that's Gumby didn't get too many victories over me last night. So fine. We'll give you this one.
Well, you can give me this one in like seven different ways. Let me tell you all the different ways I want to be given this one.
Oh, you're going to be cocky about it, are you? Okay, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I had this pick exactly right on Verdict MMA this week.
Perfect.
So yeah, I put in Santiago Ponzinibbio by knockout in the third round.
Oh, wow. Very specific.
Very specific. And was like, yes, I'm super confident about this one. So first of all, love that. Second of all, this is how I drew it up when we broke it down on Wednesday, right? Or Thursday rather, is I said, we're going up to 180 pounds. We don't have to worry about Ponzinibbio dealing with the pace of Alex Morono, where Alex Morono is going to tire him out constantly. And that's what happened, right? That's what happened. Santiago Ponzinibbio survived an early onslaught from Alex Morono and survived like the pace of Morono. And it turns out Morono couldn't keep the pace of Morono because of the weight cut. So like at the end of the day, you know, like sometimes, you know, the short notice thing works or doesn't work or whatever, but like it worked in this specific case because it went up in weight class. So yeah, I like love the fact that Ponzinibbio still had power late. Obviously like this doesn't do a lot for Ponzinibbio's stock, taking a short notice fight against an unranked fighter and not looking good about it. But man, dude, he just like, he lined it up exactly the way he needed to in that third round and poured it on.
Yeah, it just took him what, 12 or 13 minutes to actually land it, but he did land it. So
props to whoever got the under 2.5 too there.
Because, yes, you just snuck it in.
They got it in under a second.
So I should have followed my stats and gone against the short notice fighter. But anyhow, it was a good pick.
I would say it was a good read on your part, though. Like he was better. But oh, yeah. No doubt he was better.
Yep. So he may have came out with better stock than the winner, actually. Next fight, middleweight, Strikus Duplessis, submission face crank, which means Darren Till gave up. Because face crank, I guess, is technically a submission, but he face cranked Darren Till, who tapped immediately, 243 into the third round. Fight probably could have or should have been stopped in the first round because Till, apparently verbally, he was telling the referee he was okay, but he wasn't really defending himself, and he ate like 60 shots without landing one. It actually was 60 shots when the stat got flashed up at one point. Not like little shots. He was getting smashed with 60 shots. His face was a disaster. His eye was a disaster. The ref, Mark Smith, who's turning into a Herb Dean right before our eyes, let it keep going. Luckily, DDP ended up submitting him in the third round, 243 into it. We both had Dreykus Duplessis at minus 185.
Yeah, and it's super nice that Mark Smith let it keep going because a lot of the people in the Discord had Duplessis by submission, which was plus 500, which was another big score of the night. Yeah, and I just want to run back quickly what you said about the face crank not being a real submission. Do you remember when Misha Cirkunov got that on? Man, I can't remember what the poor soul he did it to.
Yes.
And name was. And he ripped his jaw out? No, he ripped his jaw out.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I was joking. It's a real submission. It's just not one that you're going to lose consciousness from. I guess from pain you could, but yes.
Yeah,
everyone seems to think that Till just had enough at that point.
I mean, he should have had enough. He got a three-round beatdown. I will give him a little bit of credit because he came out in that third round swinging. Like, he wanted to win that fight, and he knew what he had to do. But it's just not enough, man. Like, he and I know we keep talking about, well, he went to this place and trained with this person and with this place and trained with this person. But, like, the bottom line is this dude was a way better welterweight than he was a middleweight.
Yeah,
like he has, since going up to middleweight, he has a split decision win over Calvin Gastelum to show for it, and that is it. And don't get me wrong, they're setting up with tough opponents, but those are the tough opponents he was beating down at welterweight and stuff like that. He took one KO loss and was like, shit, I'm out of here. I can't do the weight cut, want to bulk up or whatever. And hey, you know, I get that people, you know, sometimes need to change weight classes because they're big for it, or they, you know, it's not worth to keep cutting or whatever, but like, he doesn't look like he fits in this middleweight division, does he?
No.
Like, he's not a ranked middleweight.
He's a top 10 middleweight, apparently, heading into the fight. I get so angry at you or people that do the rankings. Like, he hasn't won in, what, 3 years or whatever I said, and he's still top 10? Come on.
Well, I will tell you vehemently that it is not because I have him in the top 10. Yeah. That is
a ranked period. So
that is a true fact that I do not have him in the top 10. I do think I had him at, like, 14 or 15 going into that fight. Because, you know, like, a win over Calvin Gastelum isn't nothing, being that Calvin
Gastelum. And it is middleweight.
And it is middleweight. But middleweight now has enough newbies that we need to phase out the Darren Dills of the world, right? Like, Duplessis, I already had in the rankings, but I know some other people didn't. So, like, he shoots up. We'll talk about Chris Curtis later. He shoots up. Edmund Shabazian might be, like, almost back there, despite the fact that he's 1-3 in his last four, because, like, you know, those three were against really high level opponents, and now he's looking like himself again. And, like, Muniz is now in the rankings, and we saw Dolidze jump into the rankings. So, like, there's new blood, because I guess Dolidze isn't super young, but there's new blood popping in there.
Yep. So there could be hope just yet for middleweights. What do you think of Duplessis' performance? It seemed to tire out in the second round, but that's because the fight should have ended in the first. So,
yeah, he emptied the gas tank a little bit. He is a big dude, like a big muscly dude. So, like, that, I mean, that might be a problem.
That tires you out, I heard.
It's what people say.
They didn't last night, though. That they're too busy on. Anyhow, we don't need to talk about Rogan.
I just hope they don't run him against, like, a Roman Dolidze or Andre Muniz. I hope they run him against one of the other, like, top contenders that we, like, kind of need to phase out of this, like, getting stagnant top of the division. The Derek Brunsons and the Sean Stricklands and the, you know, Jared Cannoneers, Marvin Vittoris, those kind of guys. Like, run him against one of those guys. Run Chris Curtis against one of those guys. Run Muniz against another one of those guys. And let's hopefully weed out at least one or two.
Yeah, you want to keep the up-and-comers, as many up-and-comers as you can have. So then to open up the main card, the pay-per-view portion, Ilia Topuria did what we hoped he did. What we hoped he would do. Actually, he did more than we hoped he would do. He submitted Bryce Mitchell arm triangle choke 3-10 into the second round. Was way better on the feet as we expected, and gave Mitchell more than he can handle on the ground as well. Grounding and pounding him before he got the submission. He seemed to very clearly want to get the submission rather than finish the fight via strike. So he is legit, a legit prospect, as I like to say.
I think he is a legit prospect, and I've been banging the Ilia Topuria drum a little bit longer. I don't know how much this showed us, though. Because I'll say this, I think he's phenomenal. But here's the problem is that when we broke down this fight, I said Bryce Mitchell isn't a finisher on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's just going to stall out Ilia Topuria for 15 minutes, right? Ilia Topuria wouldn't be stalled out for 15 minutes. And he's 1/8 of the striker is Ilia Topuria. So at the end of the day, we knew Topuria was going to torch him on the feet. The fact that he went to the ground and subbed him after he had battered him into, you know, a shell of his former self, I don't know that shows us Topuria's sub game is, like, amazing. It's just showing us that, like, he had beaten him down.
Yeah.
And, like, we already kind of knew this about Topuria, right? Like, he did this to Damon Jackson. And, yeah, Damon Jackson's a step behind Bryce Mitchell. But, like, when he fights guys who are, you know, a little bit more on the one-dimensional side, who are better at one thing than the other, and he's good at both things, then yeah, like, of course he's going to do this kind of thing to him. Like, but would he do this type of thing to the guys in the top of the division, to the guys who are more well-rounded? You know, I'm thinking about, you know, if you decided to run him with, let's say, Sadiq Youssef, you know, a guy who's got some wrestling defense and can work on the ground and also might challenge him on the feet. Like, would he look this good? I don't know. And like, so at the end of the day, I'm not sure how much this told us about Topuria.
Wow. Look at you raining on our parade. Okay. Who do you want to see him against next?
I mean, Sadiq Youssef isn't a bad guess, but like, here's the other thing. Like, I think the UFC loves this dude now, that he went through and plowed through. So Sadiq Youssef is actually two rankings below Bryce Mitchell in the official ranking. So I think they're going to catapult him up. It really feels like this has got a Chan Sung Jung feel to it, doesn't it? Like,
sure.
Him versus Korean Zombie
Night.
It'd be really violent. You could put it on the headliner of a fight night. Like,
yep.
that seems like the right move right now for Ilia Topuria.
Sure. Book it. All right, we both went 3-2 on the main card. We lost a fight. We didn't mention this. Daniel Da Silva, he's so totally cut now. He missed
weight.
He's
gone.
Huge. Missed weight by 3 pounds over the absolute limit. And this is the lightest weight class, too, so 3 pounds means a lot more. He was 129 for a 126-pound fight. And then he had a medical issue after the fight, meaning he had must have weight-cutting issues. So his fight versus Vinicius Salvador, which was going to be easy money for us, got canceled, and he's totally going to get cut after that. So, all right, on to the prelims. Rel Rosas, after us crapping on him, we didn't really crap on him on the podcast. In the Discord, we were crapping on him more. Boy, egg in our faces. He made quick work of Jay Perrin. Another face crank. 244 into the first round. As you said in the Discord, boy, he has improved, this kid. So it's like almost like he's young and he's just learning.
You want to know what the thing is that I think he improved the most too? Because I thought about this again, and I got this read completely wrong, is that when he was on Contender Series, he was chasing submissions so hard.
Yeah.
I think because of the Contender Series thing. Now,
yeah, that's true.
In retrospect,
true.
Right? That, like, yep. for so long, Contender Series was preached as this place that, like, you get a finish or you don't get a contract. It's clearly not that anymore, but that's where it was to start. And he chased submissions so hard, he lost positions. He wound up on the bottom. And luckily, he was fighting a guy in Mando Gutierrez who, like, gave him some of those positions back. But I figured Perrin wouldn't give him those positions back. But here's the thing. The risk went out the door for him. He was like, I'm going to establish back control here. When he took the back, it wasn't take the back and jump right to the neck. It was take the back, secure yourself on the back. And that, for me, is the difference maker. He looks incredible when he's doing that, when he decides to establish position. So maybe we didn't set the ceiling high enough on Raul Rosas. Like, this version of him is going to give a lot of people problems. I think I still obviously have questions about, like, what happens when somebody stuffs his takedown, but, like, now that he is fighting within himself, he is a tough out for people on the mat.
Oh yes, he clearly was last night. So hopefully they keep giving him matchups that will challenge him slightly, but aren't too much of a step up, because he's still actually obviously maturing physically and mentally. But yeah.
You know what would be a fun fight for him? I don't need to matchmake for an 18-year-old kid who's had one UFC fight, but him and Brady Heastand would be a really good fight.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because somebody else who can, like, grapple with him a little bit and will force him to fight a little bit more dangerously, and might even force him to box a little bit. And I also think if Brady were to pass that test, you'd, like, have some real faith in where that kid's going too.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's probably a reasonable step up too in competition for,
yeah, without going too high
for Mr. Rosas. Jairzinho Rosenstrike, as I predicted, proved that the Dawkins brothers' chins are a combined chin. Apparently maybe they're secretly twins and they have that telepathic thing where they feel each other's pain.
Telepathic chin.
Yeah, telepathic. Oh, there's a good title. Telepathic chin. Anyhow, Dawkins got rocked by a jab, which is never good. I know this is heavyweight, so jabs are a bit different at heavyweight, but this is a thing we've seen before. When fighters start getting rocked by jabs, then yeah, it's definitely not a good sign. So anyhow, Rozenstruik came out like a house on fire. Totally non-Jarzynior performance. And just blitzed. Dalkus slipped a couple punches into the back of his head. But hey, who's counting? The ref apparently wasn't counting. 23 seconds into the fight is all it took. Rozenstruik won and got me a minus 175 hit and got Gumby a loss, which is the most important thing.
The back-to-back losses here for me, both the winning fighters just came out with very different strategy than I saw, right? Like Rosa's composed, taking the back, sinking his position. Rozenstruik, for the first time in like, I don't know, four fights, comes out like a bat out of hell. Like, where did this come from, dude? Where was this when you fought Curtis Blaydes? Where was this when you fought, go back to the Overeem fight. Where is this in the Overeem fight? Where was this in the Volkov fight? Where was this in, like, any of those fights before? I would have loved to seen this Rozenstruik. He has a high ceiling if he lets go. And sometimes he just doesn't. So yeah, I mean, good for him on this one. The punch that landed, didn't appear to be all that heavy of a punch, but this dude hits so hard, and that's why it's so frustrating when he doesn't let him go.
Yep. Perhaps he was thinking he was getting paid by the minute, and someone let him know, no, actually you get paid the same, dude. You probably get paid, more, because you get a bonus if you, put the foot on the gas. So Dawkins, three straight knockout/TKO losses. Not good.
No, he did hint in the pre-fight interview about possibly being able to make 205. Maybe that's the move for him. Because
The classic desperation move. Let's drop a weight class.
I mean, call it a desperation move, but this guy has always been an undersized heavyweight, right?
He's loose chunky.
Yeah, he's loose chunky. He's not particularly ripped in any way. Like, he doesn't have like big muscles. He's only weighing in the low 240s every time. And, you know, he's obviously not cutting any weight. Like, maybe just start to bulk up the cardio and see what he can do at 205. Because, yeah, it does feel like he's just running into the heavy hitters here and it ain't going to go well.
Start realizing you're a pro athlete and start acting like one, maybe.
At heavyweight, it's hard too, because Like, if he did do all of the cardio he should do to before a fight, and he did all of that kind of stuff, he's still a very small dude for the heavyweight division. So it was either cut or, like, what's kind of the point to be a 130-pound heavyweight, you know?
130-pound heavyweight would be something to see. How about 230-pound heavyweight?
That's what I mean, 200. You caught my drift.
That's all right. So anyhow, Dawkins brothers are on the fade list until further notice. So I'm sure Gumby is going to, I have a feeling you're going to find a way to pick one of these guys, though. You're going to talk yourself into it, and I'm going to tell you, no, Gumby, they're going to, they're going to get knocked out.
If you throw him down at light heavyweight, there's guys I'd pick Chris Dawkins over.
Yeah, because his chin will be better after weight cutting, for sure. So,
well, I mean, but there are some dudes at light heavyweight who don't have hands, so.
That's true. That's true. This man has hands. He's back. Eben Shahbazyan is back, as we hoped. TKO punches Dalcha Lugiambula, definitely not looking like a champion again. 441 into the second round. Shahbazyan looked good, as I said, as we hoped and as we thought would happen with his change of scenery and his time off to actually refine his game. Looks totally different too now with the beard and everything. Minus 305. That's fine. We'll take our minus 305 and proclaim that Shahbazyan could be back.
I think he had a beard before, but it was just scraggly.
Okay, yeah. He's a man now, that's all.
Yeah.
He is still super young. So
I will also say he looks physically different.
Like, yes, it looks he did. Like, yeah, totally.
He got in a strength and conditioning program or something like that, and like now looks like he's supposed to.
Well, he's 25, so that's the thing. So
yeah, like maybe it's strength and conditioning, and he's just like growing into a grown man's body. But like, he looked good. He looked like I was kind of hoping he would when I picked him. And I'll just say, like, I think at the end of the day, this move to Extreme Couture are going to be so good for him. They got to fire Dalcha, right? I don't mean to start firing people today, but like, they got to fire Dalcha.
It's the season. Fire him.
That's four in a row.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. I wasn't looking at my chart.
Four in a row and three straight finishes.
Then you got to go.
And not even to like, it's not like he's losing to like world beaters out here either. It's like Marc-Andre Barrio and Punahele Soriano.
Like Power Puna, had, come on.
Puna had lost two in a row too, and then he knocked out Dolce. So
yeah,
I think that's probably it for him.
All right, definitely. The next fight. This was our first big hit of the night. I think middleweight's Chris Curtis. A lot of people were in on the knockout prop for the underdog, so you got good money for knockout for there, and he came through. 249 in the second round over at Joaquin Buckley. There was some consternation because Buckley was way more active, which is what we were worried about, especially Superfan Jong was worried about. But Curtis came through, plus 135. Thank God. Love the guy. Love watching him fight. And that's a big hit for us. And I'm looking forward to seeing more Chris Curtis.
Yeah, and it was especially a big hit because it was the second part of that Superfan Jong Hungry Man parlay. Yep. I will say, when I watched the first round, you're right, Buckley was way more active. I personally thought I was going to score that round for Chris Curtis just because when he landed, it was big. None of the judges did. It's worth noting. They all gave
what
to
a shock.
Yeah.
So we were right. That means probably then
that we should be worried about the volume of Buckley.
No, we were right with scoring it for a Curtis if the judges run.
Great. He's always got knockout power. This is what I said when I picked him and why I told you to take him by knockout.
Which durable.
Plus 275. Crazy durable. And can always catch you and hurt you. He's a dangerous middleweight, man.
Yep, he definitely is. So looking forward to seeing more of him going forward. So that was the regular prelims. Early prelims, Billy Q hit this one too. Billy Quarantillo, TKO knees and punches for the great ape, Alexander Hernandez. So we had fun with his nickname on Discord. 4:30 into the second round. Did you hear Joe Rogan saying how Alexander's weight cut? He looks like he did it the correct way right after Gumby posted a photo in the Discord of how emaciated he looked on the scales the day before.
Well, and also I'm just gonna say this: how do you look at somebody on fight night and say it looks like he did it the right way?
Because he looked big, I think is all he's
yeah, basically but like, and that's sort of my point here too, is that like, if he had looked notably trimmer, which he didn't, he still has that like really weird torso that looks like it's mostly ribcage. But like, if he had looked noticeably trimmer, like, I don't know what you could say looks like he did it the right way. Because
he looked the same, basically.
Yeah. He looked the
which
same.
Which means
when he was in
the cage. He just cut more extreme weight, which is why he looked so bad on the scale the day before.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing for me too. Like, if you saw him on the scale, that's how you can tell he looks like he did it the right way or not. And for me, that looked awful. So for Rogan to say that, first of all, is a wild claim. And then also, it was directly proven untrue 6 seconds later, because he's fighting a gritty fight against Billy Quarantillo, which we said he was going to do. And then he got knocked out late because he tired out, which we said he was going to do. So yeah, could not be a worse cut for Alexander Hernandez. That dude doesn't belong at 45. I don't care how hard the weight cut was for him. He's just not going to hack it there.
Yeah. It's almost like the telecast would be better with you and I sitting in the seats beside Anik. Definitely would be funnier and probably would be better. definitely would be better analysis too. Because we kind of pay attention to things.
We almost pick
a narrative.
Yeah. It's crazy that we don't just say things to say things. I do sometimes. I say things to say things sometimes.
It's true. We don't just talk about Pimblett's chin being high. Yeah, we know. You've talked about it the whole fight. That's not like there's more going on in the fight than Pimblett chin up by the anyhow. They pick one narrative and they hammer it the whole fight. So anyhow, Billy Q looked good though. Like that guy. Got us a nice 165 minus 165 hit. TJ Brown made us look bad. Actually, Eric Silva made us look bad. Silva did not look good in this fight. Did not look like, honestly, he didn't look like he wanted to be there, but he had no sense of urgency. He was satisfied with, you know, being on his back, satisfied like long stretches, not doing anything. And he got himself submitted. Arm triangle choke, 341 in the third round. He was going to lose the fight as it was if it went to who knows with those judges, but he should have lost the fight if it went to the judges' decision. Not a good UFC debut for him. I didn't even look like it was. I don't even know if we can chalk it up to octagon jitters. He just didn't do anything and seemed happy with not doing anything.
Yeah, so I can comment on that because I looked at all the scorecards. He was down two rounds to none on every single judge's scorecard. Yeah. Here's I'm going to throw real weird props that I don't think anybody's ready for me to throw out here. I'm going to shoot out props to Dana White for being right on one.
Really?
Which I very rarely do. When Eric Silva was on Contender Series, he looked like a man possessed. He won in 92 seconds, I think it was. He beat Anvar Bornazarov, who was a kickboxer. And after the fight, Dana said he thought about not giving Eric Silva a contract.
Yeah,
because he fought a dude who is not in the right weight class, who is inexperienced, and who is a kickboxer. And that fight didn't really show him anything, and he's not sure he's actually that good.
Hey, he was right.
I think he's right.
Why did we listen?
I think Dana White was right, because that TJ Brown didn't go in with a good game plan, or TJ Brown didn't do the right thing here. He did. He 100% implemented his will the way he wanted to. I think Eric Silva might be overrated. I think he might not be as good as I thought he was.
Because he fought, he got dominated by a guy who was interviewed by Dan shortly before that. So it should have.
Billy Q was on my show too.
It's true.
Billy Q was too strong
for any curses.
Yeah, good day for TTP guys.
It was. And then in the opener, Gumby with his silly pick, Stephen Koslow, who looked game, but he very sloppy. Hopefully this was just short notice and he thought he was going to gas out. So he was just trying to get finishes. But yeah, he was giving up position continuously in the grappling. Cameron Simon came through, TKO knees and punches, basically almost a duplicate of his Contender Series fight where he gets dominated the whole fight and then comes through with a win at the end. This was 4-13 into the third round. Lucky for me, I had Simon at -315. Gumby was so salty about this on the Discord. He was like, shh. Firing at me and you're really adding me.
Well,
me,
but that's okay, well, so I don't mind missing a pick, but I don't take well to gloating over a pick that largely won because he got to concuss his opponent illegally mid fight.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, that knee was brutal.
Yeah, it was a brutal knee. He didn't take the DQ. He got back into the fight, and you know I actually take a little umbrage with saying he tired out, because I don't think he tired out. I think he was
getting knocked out.
He was concussed because he was winning the fight until that point. That's the bottom line. Yeah, right? It's like, and he even asked, can I have that position back? And they said, no, not if I'm going to take the point away, then you don't get the position. And like when he was in on a takedown, he finished him. When he was on top, you're right. He sometimes got swept, particularly when he was getting the mount. He was having a tough time.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, he's a better grappler than Simon. I think he was going to beat Simon in that fight. He was even in close on a couple of chokes that he was trying. Like, I think Stephen Koslow wins that fight 9 times out of 10. And I think he would have won that fight, you know, give him another try. But like, yeah, what a disappointment that fight didn't go DQ or something like that. I continue to think that Cameron Simon is going to get blasted by any wrestler in that division.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely scrambly. We'll give him that. And he definitely carries his power late into the fight. But yeah, you don't want to get dominated. These are the fights that are supposed to build you up and, you know, get you ready for the real challenges. And there are already challenges for him.
Yeah, scrambly at 35 is not enough to get you by, though. You know what I mean? Like,
he's in a shark tank of a division for sure.
Like no joke. Like, let's talk about him and another bantamweight. Raul Rosas Jr. was also on this card. They're relatively the same age. They're the same weight class. Who would you pick in a fight?
Dude,
Rosas would murder that kid. And I like Simon. He looked good on the feet. Like, but he needs to be able to stop a takedown. He fought a dude on short notice who dominated him on the ground until he hit an illegal knee. Like he's got to figure it out.
He definitely does. I figured it out last night. 8-3, $183.
7-4.
I, 6-5 for Gumby, but really 7-4.
We're
really tied. No, I should have the ankle ab one. So there you go. They give it the taketh away. So a 65% hit rate for me, 59 for Gumby overall. There's a chance I could still break even, Gumby. I got to win. I'm down $295. So.
Oh, you can do that.
I know. I've done it before. I wonder if I can pull it off. We'll see. One last fight card of the year. Gumby's down 3,100. Little tougher sled for you. recommended plays. Gumby hit one of his plays.
Two.
Yeah, fine. Whatever. So he lost 23 bucks. So you're down 274 bucks. You're really going to have to pull a miracle off the last event of the year. I am almost back to even. I'm down $4. So because I hit all three of my... Well, so I had Salvador. That fight fell off. I hit all three of my other recommended plays, so I won $41. So I've almost dug myself out of the hole, which I just went into last week. So, all right, wild event. Bonuses. Everybody got bonuses. Dana acts like he's so generous, giving people $50,000 bonuses. So DDP, Till, fight of the night, fitting. I thought it was going to be Curtis Buckley, but Curtis KO'd him before that happened. And then every finish got a bonus. Ponzinibbio, Topuria, Rosas. Rosas strike, Shabazian, Curtis, Quarantillo, Brown, and Simon. Basically the way it should be every fight card. If you get a finish, you get money, which is what some of the smaller promotions do. All right, brings us to the last card of the year, UFC Fight Night. Cannonier versus Strickland coming down this coming Saturday, the 17th, from the UFC Apex main event. Jared Cannonier versus Sean Strickland, which is fitting since their name and faces are on the poster. We got Armin Zarukian versus Damir Ismagulov, Amir Albazi, Alessandro Costa, Alex Caceres, Julian Arosa. That should be a fun one. Drew Dober, Bobby Green, Michael Olasechuk, Cody Brennage. That's the main card. Prelims, Cheyenne Vlizmas versus Corey McKenna, Jake Matthews, Matthew Semmelsberger, Julian Marquez, Darren Wynn, Syed Nurmagomedov, that's it. I know that guy. For Said Yokup Kakrachmanov, Hoffa Garcia, Hazar Mahashate. I can't remember how to say that.
I think it's Mahashate, if I remember.
Yes, Mahashate. Yes. I think he just goes by Mahashate too. No first name. Renat Fakhretdinov versus Brian Battle. Brian Battle's back, which is nice. Manila Cape, David Dvorak, Sergey Morozov, Journey Newsom. The prelims may interest me more than the main card, actually.
I don't know. I'm really excited about Armin Sakurian versus Damir Ismagulov. It's like a sleeper good fight.
Yep.
Those two are like maybe two of the more underrated lightweights. I'm also really interested in, I'm interested in every Julian Arosa fight after what he just did to yep. Hakeem Dawoodo. Like, that fight blew my mind, how good he looked against Hakeem Dawoodo. He's now, 5-1 in his sixth fight stint in the UFC, including beating Charles Jourdain by submitting him, beating the hell out of Dawoodo. You know, he knocked out Nate Landwehr, which now that aged super well. Like, yeah, I'm so interested in what Arosa does.
We shall see what he does Saturday night. So that will be our last UFC of the year. And then we're dark we're not dark. We're going to keep sticking our podcasting ears every four times a week. But UFC goes into their quote unquote off season for 4 weeks or so. All right. What else can I tell you? We'll be back tomorrow. Actually, we're going to get you some KSW picks. KSW is running. Is it their last one of the year?
Yeah, this is their last KSW of the year. Yep.
They're running a big event next week, which we will give you picks for. We'll recap Gumby's Bellator picks, which went very, very well for him because he is secretly a Bellator stan. So, we told you about Discord, Twitter, SGPN MMA, Gumby Vreeland, and Jeff Fox Writer. That's all the Twitter accounts you should follow. Read all our stuff, sportsgumbypodcast.com. Gumby and I cover many, many sports, not just MMA, but many other sports as well. My Substack, moneymma.substack.com. Last Pick'em contest of the year will be running this week. So get in there. At the very least, play the Pick'em contest. And Gumby's got the Top Turtle on MMA podcast, which we'll tell you more about later on in the week when it's actually in the feeds and you can listen to it right away. So we haven't said it yet. So as I bid you farewell, I will say I will remain Obi-Wan Kenobi, the pillow, Jeff Fox. He will remain Gumby God, Daniel Vreeland, a.k.a. the Great Ape. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.